Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The main team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
Imagine.
Quagmire.
Oh, what's that bloody expression? This is great. It's something of something and something of something of the other. So yeah, there you go.
Six of one and half a dozen of the other.
Thank you, that's it, yes. Thank you.
Mackie, I'm amazed you were able to pull that out of what he said.
This is what happens when you work with me too long. Mackie was able to finish my sentence based on next to nothing to go on. Mackie's inside my head.
I'm getting out of here, it's scary.
Hey, welcome to Polycast, episode number 107. This is Madjin. Mackie?
Still need more caffeine.
The Mian team?
Social policies with the Mian team are never a mistake.
Q&L.
Hello.
Quagmire?
Hey.
And, of course, the best of the hosts, Dan Quick.
Ooh.
Objection.
Fall back to gaming. It's always your friend.
It won't nag you for playing too long either.
Wow.
Some do. I forget which one that did that, but it was kind of annoying. It's like, you should take a break now. It's like, F you, game.
In the Senate, we discussed whether privateers have purposes in Civilization IV or not.
In Forum Talk, our opinions on advanced starts in Civ 4 and the Civ 5 multiplayer paradox.
In the mailbag, or in this case, in the phone bag, where we talked about the scouts' usability in Barbarian, we also talked about guild orders and building monuments.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
Privateer purposes. This topic was started by Raulito, and he asks, do you use privateers to get your AI opponents into making more Navy units? So, not a question.
That grammar is awful. Don't. I wouldn't look at it too carefully.
Yeah, don't try.
Anyway, in how many ways do you use them? Most of the time, I just attack anything just for the experience. Some other people replied and talked about when they actually use and how they actually use privateers. And I don't know, the first person that replied, I was kind of confused because I've never really seen a lot of people use grid generals for naval units. In fact, I don't think I ever have. I don't know, I mean, maybe it's effective, I've just never seen that done.
I think he's referring to using them to unlock the great general, in other words, to pop one. Because if you kill AI units with the privateers, you can get great generals from doing so without being at war.
Yeah, it was one of those things. You could tell who privateers belong to by seeing who pops great generals when they're not at war.
Huh.
Gee, why does Elizabeth still have a great general? Wait.
Mm-hmm. Unless you got one with a certain technology that nobody else had.
Yeah, but...
You can kind of tell when people are pushing fascism, though. It's usually not in the era of privateers.
I don't know, I mean, I feel like they're just not that useful for that long of a time, unless you're head-on astronomy. Astronomy is when you get them, right?
Actually, astronomy and chemistry, which also unlocks frigates, and that's the reason that they're not very popular, is that you pretty much have to have a tech lead to make effective use of them, or they just get destroyed by frigates. Now, people who've bulled out those things quickly or have a tech lead, I have seen them devastate the AI using privateers, just because the AI will go hog wild spamming caravels like crazy, just like he says in the original post. It's kind of like when you stack a unit outside of its borders early in the game and it's building archers. Yeah, the AI will do that with caravels. So you'll have, like, your three or four privateers, and they'll have their, like, 12 or 15 caravels in their city. And you can get the money from blockading and get some kills. It's not the most important thing ever, but if you can actually block off all their foreign trade routes on certain maps that's possible, then it's actually a material hit to their tech rate as well. And then it's pretty worth it, in my opinion. But it's a situational thing.
Yeah, I know we've used it in multiplayer to slow down an AI that was getting too far ahead.
Or each other.
Yeah. I've seen privateers been used in diplo games mostly, and they've sparked wars because people aren't sure where they come from, and they start protesting, and eventually declare war on each other because they think Player X is the one sending out privateers. The whole game actually had to stop, and people had to take a break because they got so upset with it.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
But isn't that part of the fun?
Yeah, definitely.
Depending on your definition of fun.
I'm glad to hear that, because that's the whole purpose of the privateers in the game. And I'm glad to hear that that actually occurred in a multiplayer experience. That makes me smile, and I wish I were part of it.
He loves to grief.
Only a little bit.
All right, any other uses for privateers? They go to scouting.
Yeah, extra sight bonus.
Hmm. And they move fast.
Usually caravels take that role anyway just because they're so much earlier, but you can use privateers also.
Do you guys actually build privateers?
Mm-hmm. Next to never.
On Immortal, usually not, but once in a while.
Yeah.
Occasionally rather than often.
No.
I've used them successfully a couple times on Immortal. I don't usually look to use them, though.
Yeah, you might not have a big enough window for them to actually get any effect before they're going to start throwing bigger ships at them than caravels.
Well, that and just your priority has to be astronomy and naval aspects in general to even consider them. Like, say you're going for a rifle war or cavalry or cuirassiers or any kind of war on your home continent, then you're really not going to have any window for privateers because you're focusing your resources elsewhere.
Yep.
Hmm. Maybe those who play on slower game speeds will find them to be more useful where the ages are drawn out. The tech lead is either you actually have a longer tech lead or because of... people are at parity. If for some reason people aren't building frigates, then maybe you actually get to see them more often than not. But who wants to play on a slower game speed? I don't include myself in that category. So when I see a privateer, it's somebody else's, and I just want to destroy it. They're kind of like barb galleys or any kind of barb unit. Ah, annoyance.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot civ issues in the forums.
Vance starts. Start is started by Marco Polo, and he says that he never used to play Advanced Stars until he did a scenario. Then he found out how much he liked it. Didn't wind up wasting a lot of time fog busting and can set up a tailored economy, yada yada. He recognizes that a crush that favors more long-term traits like SPIA and org, but also helps traits like creative and philosophical and setting up rapid expansion. And he wants to know our thoughts on advanced starts. I'm not sure that I agree that it particularly favors traits, aside from just the basic, you know, you're starting with the extra cities. So, you know, imperialistic might be slightly weaker. But really, I don't see much difference in terms of the traits. I like Advanced Start sometimes, but since it's so atypical on the forum games that I used to play for Civ 4, and they're not allowed in Hall of Fame games, so a lot of the formats that I would typically use them, they're not allowed. And then in multiplayer, for whatever reason, we just don't do it a lot. So they don't do it a lot, but I like the concept of them, and it's nice to have them in the game. Incidentally, the most efficient things to buy, I'm not sure if we've covered this on a previous episode or not, but definitely worker cities and units to explore early game.
We've mentioned advanced starts in passing, but we've never had a set topic on it before.
I see.
My view on advanced starts are well known, a bit of an olive branch to those who may have been thinking, oh, there Dan goes again on advanced starts. And I'm actually going to say something nice about advanced starts. Phil, you already mentioned that you didn't think that it really helped much with traits, and I agree, but I think also to tie into some stuff we've said in passing over a number of topics, an advantage for it for particular civilizations whose unique unit and unique building might arrive a little later in the game, you might actually get to use them effectively.
Well, there are advanced starts within era also, and you can have an advanced start ancient era, just for clarification.
It just means that you're going to speed up the beginning of the game. So if you don't like actually building a civ from day one, maybe that's the way to go. But realistically, I'm kind of in agreement with Dan. It kind of ruins the game for me. The whole point is to start at 4000 BC with basically nothing and build from there.
You start at 4000 BC with three cities.
Oh, yes. It makes for some fun scenarios sometimes, maybe, but that's about it.
Most scenarios are, in of their nature, an advanced start.
Well, yeah.
I would say I like them better than I can dislike them. just think that I haven't been playing them because most other people don't play them, but I actually would in a multiplayer game or something, because I think it's nice to, you know, start out your civilization with a decent bit of production and not having to kind of click end turn quickly in those first few turns to get your settler out, things like that. You have nothing to do on the turn except for end turn. Here it goes.
Gerrymander in the thread pointed out the AI does not play Advanced Darts well at all. So it is a bit of an advantage when you're playing it, unfortunately. The AI just buys stupid things so often and burns up all its points. So you actually start with a lead on it in Advanced Darts relative to other things, assuming that you actually put your points into useful things.
So with this poll that goes with this thread, try to distill it to a very simple numerical response from 1 to 5, where 1 is disliked very much and 5 is liked very much. I would put myself at number 2, somewhat disliked.
Me too.
Yeah, it'd be a 2 or a 3.
I'm somewhat like. I'm actually a 4 on it. It's not a feature I'd like you to use regularly, but I like that it's in the game and I'd like to use it sometimes.
It's fun to be different every once in a while.
Yeah, it's nice that it's in the game, but you don't have to use it.
I like it. I'm not going to cry if they take it out and never use it again, but I enjoy that it's there.
So, in the end, it's if you like it, use it. If you don't like it, don't. Everybody's happy.
Pretty much.
Everybody's happy. They get to have their opinion, and we all move on.
Yeah, but usually, of course, on the internet, it's everybody gets to have their opinion, which is that everybody else's opinion is wrong. But, yeah, okay.
Well, just yours. I disagree with that opinion.
I disagree with your disagreement.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't mean I agree. Oh no, double negative! Ah.
This is the internet. Logic doesn't count.
Let's go to the Civ 5 multiplayer paradox.
I shudder at this one because it is a serious issue.
That the one unit per hex switch essentially ruined multiplayer. Don't get me wrong, gameplay-wise, tactically, I love it. It works great in single player. But multiplayer, unlike single player, is played out on simultaneous turns. This speeds up gameplay. Instead of everyone separately taking a turn, everyone moves at once. And there is usually a turn time enabled. Because of the simultaneous turns, there is often a race to see who could move a unit or stack of units first. Now, with simultaneous turns and one unit per hex, it becomes a huge problem. Your army is spread out, each unit is far more valuable than its counterpart would be in previous civs. The tactical implications as much more vast of losing unit or taking a tile or losing a tile, etc. So it's somewhat ironic that by trying to make the game more tactical, it had the reverse effect in multiplayer, where online warfare is largely a random affair based on whomever has less lag and can click faster.
Connection wins.
Ooh, can I say something on this one?
No.
Go right ahead.
Okay.
I think you brought me on because I'm a grouchy old man who thinks that people who whine on forums should just stop it. Seriously, get over it. Okay, so more detail-wise. Simultaneous turns don't wipe out tactic and the issue that people seem to think it's a button race. Coming from Civ Rev, where it was simultaneous turns and it was all multiplayer, realistically, you start using strategies. Don't leave yourself in a position where you're going to get assaulted at the beginning of the turn if you think that you're not going to be button pressing fast enough. Stop, think, wait. It's a hard thing to transfer from, going from consecutive turn to simultaneous turn, and it does take people quite some time before they can figure that out. But you can set yourself up and use some basic strategy to not get into button races. There's been quite a few people that have managed to do that quite successfully. You just have to decide not to go for the button race.
It's not the button race, it's the connection race. When somebody, like, say, double moves you right at the end of a turn, so they can hit your city on the following turn, and then you're lagging back by, like, 3 seconds. Well, someone like me, I can order several units to attack in the space of 3 seconds very easily. I could probably order, like, 2 or 3 units to attack within 1 second. So somebody else is running high ping, or they're just lagging. I could very easily declare war, and then on the following turn, take their city before they can react because of that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you can avoid that to an extent with strategy, but it isn't really the button-click rate, which actually is a measure of skill, even though it's not the skill that you would look for in Civ. It's more the connection, and that's not a unique problem to Civ by any means. I mean, you play a first-person shooter with a half a second delay, and you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's a huge problem or it's a good problem that makes the game unplayable, But it's definitely an issue, especially with the way that you have, like, a penalty when you're on flatlands, or when you have people who just happen to be trying the same thing at the same time on the same turn. It's going to happen.
Well, I mean, what this guy's complaining about, he's complaining about a few things, but yes, lag is always an issue, no matter what the game, as you've already said. You'll just have to find a way to deal with your lag issue. I mean, yeah, multiplayer as a whole still needs more than a patch. It needs a severe rewrite.
I think its biggest issue is game balance, just in terms of what the strong things to do are and how few things are viable.
Well, it's on the forums, quite often see people talking about connection issues, not being able to get in lobbies, not, you know, this, that, and the other.
All that, too.
That's all about the connection, and if you're having lag issues because, well, the multiplayer code is somewhat using GameSpy, you're going to have the problem. CivRev came out, no one could play multiplayer. At least you can play multiplayer for Civ 5. It's an upgrade.
Sort of.
Why do they do that? I mean, honestly, like, StarCraft comes out and there's no issue, and other games had no problems.
What are you talking about?
Hmm?
StarCraft came out, I couldn't play multiplayer for quite some time.
StarCraft 2?
Yeah.
Really? I was able to get on right away.
Me too.
Battle.net didn't like my computer, and it was brand new. Didn't like the internet connection. Steam actually is twice as effective as Battle.net 2 for me.
Hmm.
Huh.
Connection-wise.
I've never even heard of a problem.
No, I haven't had Joel either.
I've been thinking about this thread and this issue, and particularly the comparison back to Civilization IV, and I'm going to put out there that actually, as much of it seems that, for the most part, who clicks first is going to become better off, I would definitely argue that more in Civilization IV as compared to Civilization V. Partially because of the one unit per tile, but also partially because of zone of control. I would found that because of simultaneous turns, particularly now in Civilization V, an advantage is actually to be watching for when someone has finished their turn, because of course they can't do anything else as compared in Civilization IV. They are locked. I actually found that I was getting ahead. It might be two steps forward and one step back, but hey, it's still one step forward. By actually allowing the other player to do what they want to do first, and then for myself to move in and actually conclude the turn. Like, I'm going to actually let them go first.
But then you're actually just playing turn-based.
In one way?
No, because you can set up click races that way. And if you know you have a better connection, you can absolutely hose somebody using that. Because, again, they can't do anything after the end of turn. I don't know why that's so true, because that would never have been true before. And I don't see the benefit to locking people out of doing anything once they hit end turn.
Again, bad coding.
I'm going to wait. I'm going to let them do what they feel they need to do. And then I'm able to take advantage of the fact that they've attacked, they've got units in certain positions. Yeah, maybe they've taken some of my units out in the process, actually making it easier for mine to have some units. Of course, this is assuming that I have some nearby reinforcements, of course. When it seems to be, like, evenly matched, more or less, on the battlefield, particularly outside of cities, or at least where cities cannot be involved in the bombardment process, that if I let them go first, I know that they can't move after they have finished their turn, so I can not only set myself up for advantage for that turn, but also thinking about the next turn, what they're likely going to have to do or want to do in order to be able to then attack myself or to be able to retreat. It gives me more time in the turn to think about what I'm going to do, knowing that, oh crap, I've clicked really fast, I've done what I've needed to do, oh crap. Now they have reacted to that. Now I need to react again in the same turn in order to either save myself or to press my advantage. Beyond that, some people have suggested some things in terms of trying to address it. One, of course, is just turn off simultaneous turns in multiplayer. Okay, the one suggestion that was in there that I did not like was this, oh well, if someone is in war, then we turn off simultaneous turns, but if a human player is not in war, then it is simultaneous turns, and that just, wow.
That'll just be hard to code and make it work.
Yeah, you got multiple humans in a game, whether it's human versus human or you've got humans versus AI, I guess more human versus human. So that means it's simultaneous for some people and not for others, depending upon if they're in war. Ow, 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 ow. No, 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 no.
Yeah, brain hurt.
The old Buddha, later in this thread, talks about simultaneous moves instead of simultaneous turns, which is all players during the common turn timer, and the turn timer is a separate issue, separate but related, tell all their units where they will move and what they will do. Then when all the players have ended their turn or the timer has run out, all the moves and orders are done at the same time.
Oh, God, no.
Code Nightmare, what do you do when both of you are trying to attack each other with a tile in between? You do meet in the middle? I mean, what the heck?
Problem.
Or if you decide to take the opposite pass and your units basically start doing little circles.
Nice. You can't even fight.
Yeah.
Especially with zone of control, like, oh, how's that going to be resolved?
No, it's just a somewhat horrible plan. One possible option, I don't know if it was in this particular thread, but it might have been in another one, is where we remove the portion of unit movement, leave that as simultaneous turns, but put it after the point where you get period of time to manage your economy. And so basically you get the time to recheck your social policies, you get time to go through all your cities if something's been built, switch your technological focus, et cetera, have a period of time up front so you can take care of all of that sort of garbage, and then go back into simultaneous turns when it comes to moving around in units. Yes, you still can go back to your cities after you're into the movement phase, but at least you're not trying to balance out 20 of my cities just popped up looking for something new to build, but oh no, I have to deal with this war.
I'm going to put out there, try actually not being the first to move. Not always, particularly if it looks like it's going to be a stalemate. You know you have units that, in addition to those that are kind of on the front line, that they're waiting for something to happen to the units that are on the front. That if one person moves, they take out your unit on the front line, they now have that tile, they've taken out a couple of others, they've injured your units, their turn is done. Now you can be like, okay, I'm going to move this unit that's been injured, I'm going to move it back. And now I'm going to move my stronger unit forward that maybe if they can't attack that turn, now they're in that particular position for the next turn, especially when I know that that person cannot do anything in response. So it's kind of like, okay, haste is kind of making waste. I'm going to let you go first. I can see what you've done. I know you can't do anything until the next turn. Now I'm going to do what I want to do. Maybe it's controversial, it sounds kind of wild, I'm talking about Civ 5 specifically, and maybe if we got rid of this, you know, once you end your turn you can't move your units, I may very well change my position, but...
I really hope they patch it.
Listeners, let me sum up what Dan is saying here. Whenever you get the chance, try to set up a double move on your opponent. That's basically what Dan is telling you to do, and it is good strategy for winning. People don't like it, but if you want to win, there you have it. That's how it's working in Civ 5, and even to a lesser extent in Civ 4. If you can set up a double move, definitely an advantage. Take advantage of it.
But please patch the end of turn issue.
Yes. And give us some turn timer options, not this eternity turn timer that we have. What happened to blazing? I miss it.
I always hated turns that are so fast. I actually like to think once in a while.
Although, yeah, they would have to go with some hotkeys so that blazing is possible, because they took hotkeys away from me and I'm crying over it. But even so, I'd like to see a faster turn timer rather than this slow nonsense.
And really, to give the best of both worlds, kind of like we had in Civ 4, where you could choose the speed of the turn timer. The people that were playing the particular game, you could come to a consensus on, do we want a turn timer? Yes or no. I would say in multiplayer, yes, you do. But then depending upon people's comfort level, decide on what that turn timer speed is going to be. Because right now it's like we either have a turn timer or we don't. And if we do have a turn timer, it is slow, and it's just typically people end their turns a lot quicker manually than we don't even forget that the bloody turn timer is on.
60 seconds is usually good enough, provided that the 60 seconds starts after the first person has ended their turn.
That is slow. Slow, slow, slow.
Well, it depends on what you're doing. I mean, if you are waiting or have a bigger empire, then it takes time. I mean, 30 seconds, sure, but it depends on...
Most of my turns in a game, unless I am in the middle of a war with like a 20-city empire, most of my turns were less than 30 seconds.
Yeah.
That's true even in Civ 5, although, you know, obviously Civ 4 was possible to move faster because you had more hotkeys available to you and more queue options and faster queue options. But even in Civ 5, I can almost always, even in war, play turns under 30 seconds.
But that's the point. It's not about how to force the turn to be 60 seconds long. It's to say, I'm done, you've got 60 seconds, that's it.
Well, yeah, but my whole point is that a 60-second turn is already really long.
It depends. Maybe there's some details in there that you're missing.
Nah.
Again, have us with the turn timer that not only is there different speeds, but like in Civ 4, if you chose blazing turn timer, how long your turn was at the start in 4000 in BC was considerably different than it was even in 1 AD. It would scale. And now, yeah, we can argue about what the formula is going to be. Oh gosh, that's a much bigger question than how we're going to decide how it's going to scale. But give us the speed difference and then allow that to change, get longer as the game progresses, because there's going to be more decisions that you're going to be having to make, typically.
If you're obviously with a group of people that you're used to playing with, it's fairly straightforward to say, hey guys, you know, don't go for a coffee. I think the other thing that this guy was talking about as a problem with multiplayer is one unit per hex, and I don't think we actually talked about it too much yet. Personally, one unit per hex, it's about strategy. I like it, and it's good for multiplayer.
What was that? Quit your whining and deal with it?
No, that was about simultaneous turns. One unit per hex is more about, you have to learn and adjust. It's a new part of the game. Yeah, if you're trying to get three human players to all go to the exact same spot, yeah, that could be a pain. But talk about it first. Use some basic strategy. Don't all try and go onto the same hex. I just like it. It actually does add more strategy and tactics than a Sack of Doom does.
Yeah, because if you've got Horus and you're on flatland, you don't have a lot of defense, you don't want to end your turn right there, because then your opponent can walk up with some pikemen or spearmen and, oops, there went your army.
Well, exactly. So don't do that.
Easier said than done sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that even also ties into what, as Phil summarized, the double moves thing that I was referring to before. When you know each unit, as the person who started this thread, let's mention his username again, or her username again, Deuce-matic, that each particular unit is more valuable than the other, especially when you recognize that, you go back to allow them to go first, and then you're able to, okay, yeah, this unit's on the front, it's going to be damaged, or it's going to be killed, or, yeah, my gosh, like, my horse is on the front, it's been really injured, I want to be able to move that back so it's not, say, killed at the start of the next turn. And that person is, of course, thinking maybe they're going to be able to finish it off, but then they all of a sudden see, like, I finished my turn, what the heck happened? Like, I thought I was able to finish that unit off. Nope, it's gone, and now it's maybe been replaced with something else that's not a horse, and that attack's not going to work. The one hex, I mean, he's complaining about it. I don't think that's much of an issue as compared to, say, the lag issue in multiplayer or some of the other concerns we have, say, with open terrain. That's something that we can work with.
Using the horseman as the ultimate example is kind of wrong. A horseman can move after attacks. So if you're moving your horseman as far as possible before attacking, then you're not using it properly. I don't like examples that use corner cases to talk about in general. And I think that's probably one of them.
Most of my MP games are cooperative, but there was one person that I've done some friendly competitive multiplayer with, and we had a game that was just, oh my gosh, neither of us were making progress, and it was only after, you know, we were at war for a couple of hours. It was a dual-sized map. It was just the two of us, but we were going back and forth and back and forth, and it was then when I realized that we're both trying to be the first person to attack. Why don't I be the person that actually waits to let them make their move first? I was actually starting to see, like, oh my gosh, this game could actually end. Heck, even if it meant I ended up losing, at least it looked like the game was going to come to a conclusion, because this massive click fest, when you've got evenly matched players, it just seemed like the game was going to go on and on and on. Essentially, you know what either the weaknesses or the negatives, however you want to phrase it, what the traits are, what the nature of simultaneous turns is. You know it's one unit per hex, so as Magin is also getting at, change. Don't be thinking about, oh, engaging in multiplayer like this is Civilization 4 or Civilization 3.
Although, one thing, instead of just sitting there waiting, you could always have your bombardment units prepped and worry about that rather than trying to run out of the way or go attack. Because if you know somebody's going to try and click fest, you might not catch their first click with your bombardment unit, but maybe you'll hit their second one as they move in towards one of your units, and then bombard them before they actually get a shot at attacking your unit.
Yeah, very true. I say to anybody, multiplayer right now, Civilization 5, you're frustrated with the click fest, don't tell them that, you know, you're not going to try to be the one that's clicking first. Let them think that that's what they're going to do. said, I'm going to put a wager out there that you may not be completely satisfied with the results, but you'll be more satisfied, at least, as compared to trying to be the first person to click, especially with lag issues. And I really didn't touch on lag issues when I was presenting my opinion, because I have been fortunately blessed with a decent internet connection, and also when we think about processing times of the game, with a decent computer to play on, whether I was talking about Civilization 4 or Civilization 5. Kind of the game's fault, which you can get into about system requirements, etc., and not so much the game's fault as in your internet connection.
Or the use of GameSpy.
Greetings from the mailbag, where we address listener questions and comments.
Hey guys, what's going on? I just want to say I really appreciated the podcast focusing on Civ 5. Got some good points in there, and I haven't called in a year or two, I guess, but with the new Civ out, I wanted to get back hooked up with the podcast. So appreciate the new info. So just, I guess, bring out a few points. One, which I think that scout is actually useless, because with the barbarians, they don't last very long. Me and a couple of the buddies to play, we always build a warrior first. I think Dan had mentioned usually build a scout last time. It's just kind of a waste.
Scout is not useless.
I agree.
Depending on if you go a hard difficulty level, the barbarians are going to be tougher. But if you do something like you've picked up the first policy in honor, you've got advantage against barbarians, and the scouts can take out the warriors even.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Not all the times. And the scout has the advantage over the warrior is that they move the same amount of moves over all terrain.
Yeah.
So there's the ruins you can get to faster. You don't want to build a whole army of scouts, but you want at least one or two out in the beginning.
Yeah, and you can finish them more quickly, too.
Yes.
A scout is compared to a warrior. Those early turns, my.
5 turns, that's it. If it takes more than that, you forgot to set your production.
Or you're playing on a really slow game speed and you're insane.
That's true.
Yes.
Oh!
I fully agree. The scout is not useless. You get map knowledge. Map knowledge is always one of the most important things.
Mm-hmm.
You find out where barbarians are, find out where the runes are, you find out who your opponents are. The sooner you run into somebody, the sooner you can get some sort of trader agreement going. Not to mention that, yeah, scouts versus barbarians, I would not generally do. Usually it takes 2 or 3 hits in between 5 turns or more of healing. But you can also use the scout to fly into a barbarian camp if that barbarian walks away. And it does, a lot. So if the barbarian walks out of its little camp, you can run in, get the 25 gold, run out.
As far as camps go, especially if you can get to honor, not only do you get the combat bonus, but you get to know actually where those camps are on the map, so then you can, like, okay, I don't want to be going over there with my scout, because they're likely going to get picked off. But if you happen to get near a barbarian camp, and there's even just one of them in there, particularly if you can have your scout attack from, say, a forest tile or a hill tile, then that's giving them an extra advantage in terms of, yeah, you're probably not going to be able to take them out on first go, unless you're paying a really low difficulty level. But early on, until they start getting a little later, and they start getting a little better than having warriors and lots of warriors running about, they're definitely worth it. And sure, your initial scouts are probably going to die, but by the time they die, it's not going to be like, well, that was a waste of 4 turns. Think about how many turns of advantage you got because you got a bunch of gold and you were able to maybe purchase a warrior after that, for instance. Or you were able to get a technology, or your population was able to grow, or you were able to get your first settler out sooner. You actually got some culture, so you could get to, say, honor that much sooner, and then you can get to the second social policy that much more quickly as well.
And actually, one of the things is scouts work quite well against archers.
Yeah, archers don't have very much defense in melee, so you can just run right up to them and go, pow!
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about terrain as a factor, because I know when I have my archers, I like putting them on nice hills with forests in front, so they can keep shooting you until you get close enough, and then I'll move. But scout? No, the scout will just run right over that. It's good for harassment tactics, maybe, and of course, so you can get those nice little promotions. Probably unlike Mackie, I do like some of the scout promotions.
Well, no, I like the survivability tree, when I can get it.
Yeah. I wouldn't make more than 1, maybe 2 scouts at the beginning of the game before starting to do other things, but definitely 1. And sometimes I get enough cash to be able to buy another one while I'm still building a worker as my next unit.
In my Let's Play with Japan, I had a scout for like 100-some turns, and I was actually killing barbarian brutes repeatedly using that scout.
Yeah.
They don't get like any direct combat bonuses. I was just abusing the flatland advantage, well, disadvantage for the barbarians. So as long as you move it properly, there's really no reason you should be losing it that easily.
Yeah, don't make the mistake of, oh, I know, I'll build my warriors and I'll buy my workers. Oh, you only make that mistake once or twice. What, it costs that much? Oh,
yeah.
Whoops.
Buying a scout or buying a warrior, much easier.
Okay, so we addressed that.
One thing I would like to, if you don't mind, mention for the possible upcoming podcast is talk about the build order and when to settle. It's just interesting on a maybe smaller standard map. How soon before you build that first settler? I'd be interested to get your panel's opinion on that. And something like, the build order, like when to build a monument. I guess it depends on what you're going for as the policy trees are concerned. But like just a general first maybe 30, 40 turns to games, what you guys think. Appreciate it.
Boy, that's the first 30, 40 turns of the game. Okay, well, I think we can talk about, the first turns of the game. Scout.
Yeah.
Tie into the last point.
Scout, maybe a second scout. Then probably your worker, because you've got your warrior that you start with. So if you need any defense, you've got something.
Yeah.
If he hasn't wandered too far off.
You want to take stock of what's in your immediate cultural border in terms of resources. Go for the technologies that are going to be able to then allow the worker to improve those resources. So as long as it's the time it's going to take me to get that technology, it means that the worker's actually going to be able to do something. I think that'll determine when you're going to be building your first worker. You may decide also, he talks about like a standard size map, right? Okay, so depending upon the type of map, and imagine you kind of got that too, you might want more than one scout because, oh, I've explored this direction, there's still more to go in that direction, let's have a look in another direction. Usually by that time you have at least a good idea, if not where another AI is, where some more, happiness resources are, for instance. Maybe getting an idea of some of your strategic resources as well. So if you also have the warrior, and you definitely don't want to be sending out a settler on a scorched.
Well, if it's not too far from your culture border and you've just been through there clearing it, you might be okay doing that.
Barbarians have this fun habit of appearing randomly at the beginning of a turn. So you might have just cleared it, and then all of a sudden, whoops, we're here. I wouldn't use the warrior for hammering on barbarians till after you get a good view of what the local area is. Mostly because if you're playing with runes turned on, you want to get to those runes before you get to the barbarian camps.
Especially on the off chance you could get either a scout or a warrior promoted up a level.
Oh, exactly. Or cash, or culture, or population.
Exactly.
Yep.
Now, granted, if you have runes turned off, like some people do like to do, map knowledge just is much better than hammering against a barbarian for a little while. Don't forget to bring them back and start clearing out the barbarians, but...
Yeah.
My personal build order that I think works fairly well is scout first, followed by worker. And while I'm building that worker, I'm teching mining, because I do love to chop forests and build mines really quickly. I can usually manage to get the 140 gold for another scout, so I'll do that if I get it early enough and there's another direction to go. Or I'll just keep saving up, and by the time the worker's done doing the first few things that I need, I can usually get enough gold to buy off a settler at the same time as building one after the worker. Go from one city to three, where possible. But I also like to shoot the Great Library, and not just for Code of Laws like everybody else. I'm much more warrioristic. I will take the Great Library and go straight up ironworking, straight to a long swordsman, and run over your nice little happy river army.
Long swordsman?
Yeah, that's what the Great Scientist is for.
That's steel, huh? You go all the way to steel that quickly?
Yep.
Nice. Because you can involve another Great Scientist or so as well, and all of a sudden you're already there very early.
Yep, and warriors upgrade that tech tree, so, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty devastating.
18 attack person while you're running around with horses?
My first 30, 40 turns, I'm thinking about an offensive army. I want animal husbandry. I want to know where my horses are, and I'll want to know more quickly if, of course, I have, like, a pasture that I can improve for, say, cow for food, or if I know there's an AI relatively near me because my scout has found them, then I want to know where the horse is. I'm going to plan for, if not the second, then certainly the third city, hopefully the second if I don't have horse already, is going to have horse of some description. Even if it's not enough for an offensive, hopefully it's enough for offensive, but even if it's not, then I can be using that to farm some additional experience by going after some more barbarians, maybe try to find some still ever elusive ruins at that point, particularly if I'm finding barbarian difficulties and they're, for some reason, really going after my scouts. When to build a monument? For myself, a monument in the capital, typically no. But in my new cities, yes, because it's not going to be able to do much of anything typically when it starts. It's trying to grow. Of course, settling the city, I'm thinking, you know, I can go out 3 tiles worth. I don't want to have to be buying that tile. I've got better use for my gold in the form of units, for instance. So I'd rather save that gold, not buy the tiles, have the monument there to help with the culture, not only for that, but also towards what the caller was getting at, as far as the policy trees are concerned.
I will toss in a monument where possible, although it's not exactly high on my priority list right away with my capital. But I will eventually pick it up.
Yeah, I'll work it in there. Reasonably early with the capital, but not too early. And it's nice to get the social policies, but you want to set up other things as well early in the game. When it comes to other cities, though, it's a pretty cheap way to get some tiles without buying them.
Yeah, well, at least for the first probably 10 tiles, it's generally okay.
Yeah.
I find that the cost to get another tile straight through culture starts to get really expensive after the 10th one or so.
That's why you build Angkor Wat.
Or just ICS, because then you can't possibly need more than 10 border expansions.
Then it doesn't matter.
The caller, he didn't say what his name was. I mean, I know what his phone number is because it was associated with the call. So I'm not going to identify him by his phone number because he probably doesn't want a lot of people phoning that number. I'm not going to say it on the...
Give us his social security number instead. I'm sure we can figure out who he is.
I wasn't able to get that from his call.
Bummer. Bank number? No.
No.
Okay, fine.
Credit card number? Not even that, no.
Oh, come on.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
The strengths of warfare versus other things, or just big empires in general. I would really like to see it balanced. I would really, really like to see that balanced. Because right now there's pretty much one way to play, and that's getting a huge empire one way or another. I don't like that. I'd like to see more balance.
But that's always been the case, it says, more or less. Big empires trump small empires.
Yeah, I know, but that doesn't mean it's right.
No.
The opposite of the culture of victory. They made domination way too simple. Even in Civ Rev, I know it's horrible to mention that, but it was harder to get a domination victory, where you actually had to take all of the caps. That actually makes a bit more sense. Or at least, you know, in Civ 4 and before, you needed to take a massive amount of territory, or do something. Not just show up at the last second and go, thanks, do all the hard work for me. I'll be over here in the corner. You done yet? Okay, thanks.
This is Quagmire finishing off Polycast episode 107, here with Dan Quick.
Hi all.
Makalua.
I'm on a boat.
Me and team.
Advanced start, no, this time it's an advanced finish.
Sure.
Bye.
And Magic.
I'm going for a Timmy's.
I will go to Kira now, actually.
Yeah, that's her Skype handle, but that's not her foreign handle.
Whoops.
Who is... Is that an Urn nickname? Ooh, or Civ 4 topic.
One of.
Well, one that's interesting.
Oh, well.
Yes, of course.
Just kidding. My view on advanced starts are well known, but this is a bit of a, well, I wasn't going to swear, but okay.
Here with Dan Quick.
Lyle.
Makalua.
I'm on a boat.
I forgot the other, I mean, I don't.
I'm so distracted.
That was awesome.
What's the other name? QL.
Bye.
And that was all.
Except for me.
Guest co-host is left out.
Bastard.
Oh, no.
Well, everybody knows who you are anyway.
Failure.
Record date, November 6th, 2010.
Civilization 4, Warlords and Beyond the Sword, sound clips, copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.